Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening. Welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now Blog Talk Radio Show, brought to you by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, also known as NASCA. My name is Tammy Schaffstall. I'm calling in from Lighthouse Point, Florida, and I'll be your host tonight. I'm also a survivor of child abuse. Tonight's show is a question and answer call-in discussion show, and we have our professional, Ms. Barbara Joy Hansen. Barbara Joy is from Milford, Massachusetts, and she's a child abuse survivor and violence prevention expert. Her book, Listen to the Cry of the Child, is where she shares her journey. She and her husband work in prisons, homeless shelters, domestic violent conferences, and she facilitates a survivor group called Beauty from Ashes. So it's always a pleasure to have Barbara Joy as our guest speaker and host. So we'll welcome her in a few minutes. But before we get started, let me tell you a little bit about NASCA. The National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse is a nonprofit 501c3 organization and was self-supporting through our own contributions. Here at NASCA, we have a single purpose to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent and physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so from two perspectives. First, we educate the public. Especially getting society over discussing the childhood sexual abuse. And we present the facts to show child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. We also offer hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone who is interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Again, tonight is an open mic show. We know a lot of people do stream in. If you are listening and want to call in and join us, we'd love to have you. The telephone number is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. And we do have a couple of people in our queue. We've got Mark from Louisiana. Good evening, Mark. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Tammy. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for being here. Thanks for co-hosting and the support. It's been a couple of weeks since I've even been on the show, so I'm really excited to be here. And it's always a pleasure to have you join us, Mark.
I'm glad to be here, too.
Sure. We also have Cherie from Tennessee. Good evening, Cherie. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing very well. It's a little warm here in South Florida, but I'm not complaining. It could be worse. I could be in the snow. So all is well.
Yeah, we are having an Arctic blast here. So I think Saturday is supposed to be like, the high is supposed to be like 11 degrees, and that's not normal for in Tennessee. So.
Oh, that sounds really, really cold.
Yeah.
Wow.
Tammy,
yeah. Well, stay warm and bundle up. Well, I guess I'm blessed to live in South Florida. I should count my blessings. Sometimes in the summertime, it gets so hot here, though. Oh, scorching.
Yeah. Really. In Louisiana, we're going to have a cold blast, too. It's going to go down to 19 tomorrow night.
I moved to Louisiana, the same area that you guys live in, and I was told it never snowed there, ever, and it snowed twice in the same year.
We just had snow about 2 weeks ago.
Wow. It was a dusting, but it was. I think it was in 2015. So you guys do get snow every now and again. Well, we'll go ahead and get started. Hopefully other people will call in. Again, the number is 646-595-2118. And without further ado, I am going to introduce Barbara Joy Hansen and turn the mic over to her so she can get us started. And if she wants to start with a theme, I will give her that option. Barbara Joy, good evening. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. Thank you, Tammy. I'm good, but I'm tired. It's been, since I talked to you last, I've had several podcasts and Zooms. I'm very blessed. The doors are opening now and continue to open for me for big TV shows and podcasts and Zooms. So today I had one with a new show called Transitions, and mm-hmm. It was good. It was a male and a female. The fella been married 45 years, and then I don't know if the girl was married. She was younger. And it was good because I think it's good, like tonight even, with the balance of male and female, because we each have something to give. And, you know, my show today, I had sent him a book. His name was Chris. And he started out almost immediately, because he had read in my book about the infidelity and the pornography that came into my marriage. And I didn't realize that when that happened, of course, there's huge, your life was already shattered by what I had gone through in my childhood with incest and clergy sex abuse, and then to have the rug pulled out with the betrayal of my marriage, I didn't realize it was a death. And he brought that up first thing, and he said, I want to address, he said, men, listen up. I was involved in pornography, and I've been married 45 years, and it shattered my wife. So he addressed that, and I said, you know, it takes a real man to admit that, and I appreciate that, you know, that you are admitting that he is no longer involved in it, but and of course, women delve in it too. But he asked me a few questions, and the thing that I addressed was that, first of all, pornography has no place in a marriage or in a relationship. It's an addiction. I mean, you could use alcohol, drugs, sex, whatever. But I said, ask yourself a question. Who sees? You don't think anybody sees you. You can go online. You can go in a magazine. You can get it anywhere. And kids as young as 6 start with that addiction. But I said, with pornography, ask yourself, would you look at this with your significant other or your wife by your side? Would you look at this with God by your side? He sees everything. So I years and years later, after the drugs began to come back in, and I helped my husband heal, and he went to workshops and came home with books about sexual abuse and pornography and started reading them, and infidelity, we read them together because I said, I need to understand you and, you know, address this too and help you heal. What I figured out was that he comforted himself with women because of his father's suicide. His dad was 57, and my husband was 27 when I discovered it. And we had a really hard time getting pregnant, and, you know, the loss with me with all that, all the triggers, I mean, all the things that happened to me with PTSD and trauma, I had inability to conceive a child. So we tried for years and adopted. So that started my journey through pain. And I wondered if anybody does have a question tonight, and if not, I'll ask one. Does anybody have anything they'd like to ask, maybe even or address?
I can't think of any right at the moment.
Mark?
Yes. I would say, talking about in a marriage, infidelity is a big killer. To me, betrayal is a number one killer to me. Now, we have, Pam and I haven't had any problems like that, but when we first met, I knew that we were younger, but I always felt inside that you can't, when you're going to commit to a woman, it's got to be just a woman. And to me, I know how I would feel if I was betrayed.
Mm-hmm.
And that always kept me focused to stay on the right track, to try and stay with that. Plus the fact that we did become Christians, so that even made it stronger to stay on that track, because we knew, like you said just before, God sees. So to me, you must have loyalty and you must have faithfulness, because betrayal is a killer. And if you always got to think, you know, the golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. I know for me personally, it would kill me. It would hurt me for betrayal. So I'm not going to do it. I don't want to do it because I know that it would hurt so bad. And I want to have, you know, you have more joy and more happiness. And I can say that, and for me and Pam, because we've stuck by that rule. We've stuck by not betraying, not infidelity, being faithful.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a very strong point that people should realize. When you're going to commit to someone, make sure that you're truthful about it and that you're going to commit and you're going to stay faithful and you're going to realize that, you know, you do not want to betray, because it to me, it's a killer.
Well, I agree. How long have you been married, Mark?
We're going into 39 years now.
Oh, good for you. Wow. We're 55 years. And how about you, Cherie?
We've been married. Mike and I have been married 4 years.
Mm-hmm. But then you were married before, too.
Yeah,
right?
I was married. Yeah. The husband I was married to before I married Mike, his name was also Mike. And he committed suicide, and I was the one that found him.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, thank you. I haven't told you. I haven't told, you know.
That's,
I just thought I would bring it up when.
Yeah.
It is, and the thing is, when it's different when you it's different when you find them. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, it affected Wayne's, my husband's brother, who was 19, tremendously. So,
and,
he still hasn't dealt with it. He still hasn't. And he's 40-something.
See, I had to go get help.
Yeah.
Because
well, he tried,
I found.
Good.
It took me a good 5 years to get to come to terms with it. I could tell you that there was just, I don't know where to start, but.
That's
he
okay.
He was having trouble at work, and I think
yeah.
he was being bullied at work. He worked at West Tennessee State Prison.
He was
a corporal.
That's a hard job. Yeah.
And he came home, and he told me, first of all, I noticed he was acting strange. He was pacing the floor. He was chain smoking. You could tell he was scared to death. I kept asking him what was going on. I was like, did something happen at work? He told me that he'd seen something that he shouldn't have seen.
Mm-hmm.
Said he saw a guy, a prisoner, get the teetotal crap beat out of him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, according to him, they broke him down.
Right.
And, well, said that he tried to, they brought the guy over from another unit to my husband's unit. My husband
mm-hmm.
was over a unit. And
right.
they brought him over to my husband's unit, and they put him in a room where there was no cameras, and they beat these stuffings out of him.
That's awful.
And
well,
he tried to stop it, and he couldn't. Well, there was word of it had gotten back to the warden, and they were fixing to do an investigation, so he was fixing to get caught up in that. And the thing is,
yeah.
he knew not to tell, not to report it, even though he was a supervisor. The
right.
guys that were involved in the beating were a part
oh, yeah.
of the good old boy
yeah.
clique there.
They'd
every
come
workplace
after him.
Has. Right. So he couldn't, he was in a hard place in Iraq. Even though he was supposed
right.
to report it, he couldn't, because then they would come
mm-hmm.
after him and hurt him.
Exactly. Prison ministry is a really hardcore ministry that I've gotten very involved in as well. But I'm so sorry, and I so understand, because my husband couldn't talk about it for probably almost as long as I didn't talk about the sexual abuse for 30-some years. He didn't either, and I didn't even see him cry, I think maybe one time at his father's funeral, and that's over 40-some years ago. But now I realize that he comforted himself with the pornography and with women, instead of dealing with it, instead of talking about it, instead of getting help. And if you medicate that way through fantasy
right.
or that way, it becomes compulsive, progressive, it builds tolerance, it becomes obsessive,
right.
and you withdraw like your husband did, your ex-husband, and you
right.
and my father-in-law. I think he had trouble at work as well, and you escape your emotions and you don't talk about it. Your problems become a monster within your soul, and you can't control that. And it's almost like the sexual abuse. You live a public face and a private or isolated face. You live a hidden life, which feeds the cycle of behavior to acting out that paralyzes you and leads to despair and demoralizes and leaves you hopeless and suicidal. With no purpose. My father-in-law, he went to a counselor, or he made an appointment, but the day that he was supposed to go see the therapist, he committed suicide. He couldn't go through with it. I don't
right.
think people want to die, but I think it's an escape from whatever they're trying to escape from. So
I believe that, too. And, he didn't tell me everything,
Right.
But anyway, we had just gotten married, and, he was still in my apartment. We got married on October 14th, 2011, and he died October 26th. So we were...
Oh, my goodness.
We were in the process. He was already living with me, per se, starting from the wedding date, but he still hadn't moved all his stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
And his house, you could see his house from the prison. He lived he lived just a stone's throw from it.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway,
You okay? Cherie?
We were going to load my car up. Yes.
Yeah, you went out a minute.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
We were going to fill my car up with his stuff and his truck up, and then he was going to turn in the keys, and that was going to be it. Well, he had gone down there, and my car had messed up. I was in college at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't get a hold of him. And I had tried all day. I was stranded at school. I couldn't get a hold of him. And I finally had to call my best friend to come and pick me up. And she's like, okay, well, why don't we go by Mike's and check on him? Maybe he fell asleep, maybe, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, we started down there, and you could see Mike's house about a half a mile off of the main road. It was out in the middle of the field. The prison's out in the middle of nowhere. So you got this huge field. And we turned on the gravel road to go to his house. And I noticed that his truck was parked in the back of the house. And I looked at my best friend and I was like, that's strange. His car is parked in the back of his house. He never does that. And my first thought was, is he cheating on me?
Right.
You know, that was my first thought.
Yeah, yeah.
But when we pulled up and I knocked on the door three times, there was nothing. It was just a dead calm, dead silence. And it was like a chill ran down my spine. There was something wrong because it was just too quiet. It was an eerie kind of silence. It was like there was no life there. So anyway, he didn't answer. So I went to check the truck. And as I'm coming up, I'm looking through the back window of the truck. And I'm thinking, what, did he just go on a bender and get drunk and pass out in his truck? So when I got to the passenger side window, I looked in and it's a sight I'll never forget. The gun was in his lap, you know. Half his head was blown off.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, you never get those things out of your head.
Right.
Well,
and I just took off running. I just screamed and I took off running. My best friend heard me and she took me, what's wrong, what's wrong? And I was like, my husband's dead. My husband's dead. Oh, God, my husband's dead.
A lot of guards and a lot of prison inmates commit suicide because they can't handle the pressure. So it's such a, I call it a cop out, but maybe not. I don't know. I've lived with my husband for so long, and we can talk about anything now, which is really good. And God's restored our marriage and brought it back to the way it should be. But with the infidelities and the pornography or any of those kind of sexual addictions, I was asked on the show today about recovery from that. And like I said, he came home from workshops with books, and I said, I want to read it with you. Well, he didn't want to read about infidelity. You know, that was the last thing he wanted to hear. I said, no, but I need to know, and I need to help you work through it if I could, as I was trying to work through my own recovery, which took me years. But what I say is admission, admit it, and men should admit it to another man. Confession, I have a problem, I need help. And it's the same if you have a drinking problem or drug or whatever. Accountability, make healthy friends, don't stick with the old friends. Build character and intimacy, let the walls down. Replace your behavior, turn away, which takes time and understanding and discovery and recovery.
That's right.
So, yeah, and truth and honesty, like Mark said, is the key. So that's certainly not a subject that I had thought about today, but I am glad that you brought it up, or that it came up, because I think it's important for a survivor of suicide or infidelity or pornography. I think it's important to talk about it, number one. It doesn't have to be with a therapist. It can be, you know, like on a show like tonight, because maybe somebody's listening in the show tonight, or will listen to the show after it's taped and think, oh, my goodness, yes, you know, this happened in my family and we haven't talked about it and we need to. So.
Right.
Yeah. But my question that I was going to come up with tonight, unless somebody has something else that they want to discuss about what we just brought up. Any other thoughts before I ask the question?
Well, before we go, I'd like to welcome Pamela from Louisiana to the show as well. So, good evening, Pamela.
Okay.
Thank you for joining us.
Hello, Pam. Pamela.
Hi,
I'm
Pam.
Sorry.
I think she goes by both.
Hi, Pamela. This is Bobby Joy. You there?
Hello, Pamela. This is Cherie.
I was muted. I'm so sorry. I was muted.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna put myself on hold for just a minute. Go ahead, Pamela.
Okay. I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to see you are here, Barbara Joy and Cherie and my husband, Mark. And I look forward to the show. And I don't have anything right now, so I look forward to Barbara Joy's question if she has one.
Oh, thank you. Yes. So you're married to the Mark that's on the show, Pamela?
I am.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you for tuning in. Okay, so my question is, when have you felt most alone with no glimmer of light or hope? Maybe we've already covered some of it already. So think about it, and if anybody wants to tune in and give an answer, when have you felt like nobody understood you, or you felt most alone with no glimmer of light or hope?
I can answer that.
Okay, Cherie.
Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Cherie.
Okay. I was just giving Pam a chance to talk, but my lowest point like that was when I was in school and being bullied, because I would try to tell my parents what was going on, and the thing is, back then people didn't know much about bullying, I would get bullied, and then I would be the one to get in trouble, and then my parents would blame me because they had tried to stick up for me, but there was only so much to do. Their hands were tied. So, you know, in order to make sense of what was going on, they blamed me. And
that's awful.
Quite a
yeah.
few years there, I felt like, you know, I had no one in my corner.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I tried to commit suicide and almost didn't make it. I was 14 years old. And I downed a bottle of pills, and they rushed me to the hospital. I was in intensive care for a week, and I almost didn't make it.
Wow. Well, you're here.
That's right.
And I'm glad.
Well, it's like, thank you so much. I look back now and I realize that I had to be tore down in order to get built up again.
Mm-hmm.
And
I saw you
also, I want to
Facebook.
Mention something.
Or the
who,
about
me?
The being torn down and have to be Pamela. The quote about you have to be torn down before you can build back up.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a
yeah,
good. That's
and,
a good thought.
And I
thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. But I'm going to go ahead and stop because I've forgotten what I was about to say.
Pamela, do you want to answer the question, Pam? Pamela?
Oh, I do. My darkest time in my life was when I had everything, a huge house, my husband, two jobs. Two children, everything a person could want, okay? And I felt like I was, like, on top of the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what happened was when I became a nurse after my sexual abuse, that became my identity, okay? I didn't see myself as Pamela because I couldn't, because my inner child was not worked on yet. So what happened was
I got fired from the job as a nurse.
Mm.
And, yeah, what happened was the lady, the nurse ahead of me, I told on her because she was being lazy herself. She was giving us way too much work. And I told on her, well, she was too politically connected, and so I got fired, okay?
Mm.
And so that just took my identity totally away from me, and I got so angry, and I turned the anger inward, and I started getting depressed.
Mm-hmm.
And after 6 months of depression, I was a walking dead person.
Mm-hmm.
And to put it all in a nutshell, what happened was Jesus saved me. Mark prayed that night in the name of Jesus, and I never felt peace like I'd ever felt my whole entire life. But I didn't know
what it was.
I know. And then I went to sleep that night, and the next day I woke up and the world looked different. And I was like, what is this? What's going on? I didn't know what it was.
Mm.
And so I get in the shower, and it doesn't feel like the dirt from the outside coming off. It felt like dirt from the inside was just pouring out of me. And I said, Jesus, if you're real, I want to know you. Forgive me of all my sins. And I started living for him.
Oh, how wonderful. Have you ever read the book Shame Off You?
No.
Look it up. Not Shame On You, Shame Off You. When you said that, there's a picture of a little boy on the cover of the book. And the book was written by a sexual abuse survivor. I think he was he's a pastor. And there's a picture of a little boy on the cover of the book, and he's being hosed off. He's full of mud in a mud puddle, and he's being hosed off. And it's called Shame Off You. And I can't remember the author, but it's one of the best books I've ever read on shame. And you can get it pretty cheap. The fellow that wrote it, I mean, it's got some terrific chapters in it. Shamed his wife. He was a pastor, and you've got to come to all the meetings at church, and you got to look good, and this and that. And he really put a lot of shame on her. But it tells different stories in the book with people that have gone through shame. You'd love it. Google it and get a copy of that one. And if you can get a copy of my book, I'm going to put a little plug in for it, too, because we really need to sell the books to help with human trafficking and domestic violence and sexual trauma. So you can call my number, 508-473-1280, and get the book from us so that we can you can get it from Barnes & Noble, but they take a 45% cut from what I get back. So this way, and it's only $20 plus shipping and handling. But thank you for sharing that. When you brought it up that you got fired, I also got fired. One of my very first jobs at Laternal College, where I was dating my husband, I got fired because I went for my lunch breaks with my boyfriend, who was my who ultimately became my husband. And I don't know if they created rules or not. I was working for two professors, English professor and another professor as a secretary, and I loved my job. I loved being at the college, and I, didn't have it in me to finish high school, but to go to college, I just didn't. But I was at the college and experienced it in a different way. But when I got fired, I was devastated. I thought I did something wrong, and here I was going on my lunch breaks with my husband at the doghouse, which is what they call the snack shop. So, but I suffered in silence for decades, and I was locked up, like you said, dead man walking. I was so locked up where it seemed like there was no escape. Nobody understood. I couldn't talk about it. You didn't hear about it. Nobody was, and we didn't have TV back then. I didn't have a TV growing up, and then when we first got married, I don't even think we had a television either for a while. But I was filled with complexity and anxiety and doubt, and secrets had been buried for so long from the childhood incest and the clergy sex abuse. I couldn't escape the shame. But if you remain silent, then you become, I believe, like you said, mine was inward anger, but I didn't think I I was angry. I didn't think I had it. But it did have a huge effect on my marriage and our adult life, although I don't think my husband mentioned it back then. We didn't talk about it hardly at all. And, you know, for years I just stayed alone and silent and didn't answer the door too often, but I only had one or two friends. And it was in 1998 when the lid blew off of Pandora's box, when all the suppressed venom like poison from a viper spewed out at my dad, when I finally told both my parents what the clergy did, because I was about to face him and go through a sex abuse case with support from my childhood denomination. And I was bringing in addicts and codependency with, you know, drug dealers, and bringing them in and out of our home from prison and saving everybody, which wasn't the thing to do because I was just as sick as they were. But that's when I felt most alone.
That reminds me, Dr. Joy, you know what me and my husband did when we got saved? We started bringing in gang members in our house.
Oh,
my
yeah.
God.
Yeah.
We thought we were going to save the world.
Yeah, I know. And we didn't know anything back then either, because I wasn't brought up that way to know anything about gang members. We had a pimp come in. We had heroin addicts, crack addicts, women and men. We had a Boston gangster named Charlie. His street name was Nasty. And I led him to faith in Christ. And he got rid of all the pornography and his gun and became a strong Christian and got a motorcycle. And my husband helped him get his heavy-duty license in Boston, because my husband worked for the Big Dig product in Boston. And you know, it's amazing how God brings people into your life like that that you don't intend and you don't know anything about. So,
well, God protected us and saved us through that incident. Some of them got saved, but some of them stayed hard. You know, well,
mm-hmm.
These people were wannabes. They weren't really hardcore gang members, but
They
were kind of wannabes, you know, young kids that are skipping school and wearing
right.
Their little rags around.
Yeah.
And, you know, calling themselves the Crips and all that, you know.
Right. So, Tammy, how about you?
Yeah. Well, there are plenty of times that I have felt hopeless. There's probably more than I can think of right now. I can't think of a particular one. I've never been suicidal. I mean, I've thought about it. I think everybody has thought about it every once in a while, but you know, I've never
mm-hmm.
gone that route. I mean, throughout the years, you know, one of the things that I struggle with is self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've even had people on this show, you know, that have come and gone and, you know, pointed out to me, you know, grow up, you know, quit being such a baby, quit whining, you know, not too long ago. And I had it once before, and I'm thinking, okay, well, this should be a safe space, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when I divulge, I feel exposed, you know, and people, you know, I think that's what bothers me more than anything is, you know, when you reach out to people and you share some of your inner thoughts and it comes
yeah.
back to you and hits you upside the head,
right.
It makes you feel foolish. It may,
yeah.
Then you question, well, you know, maybe I shouldn't have said something about my self-esteem. You know, maybe
I've done
that's something
so
I should say.
Yeah.
It makes you feel exposed. You know,
oh,
and it's
yeah.
not just here, you know. I mean, I've had it a couple of times here. Not much, but, you know, a couple of times that, you know, some people have made those comments. And you know, I scratch my head and think, oh, wow, you know, this is supposed to be a safe space. But it was like
mm-hmm.
a dart being thrown at me.
Mm-hmm.
I've had family members, you know, throw darts at me.
Yeah, we all
have. Yeah, and it makes me feel helpless. You know, it makes me feel like I don't want to share. You know,
yeah.
And it feeds into the self-esteem that's already paper thin that I build up, and then it's like somebody just takes their foot and knocks over an anthill. And that makes me feel hopeless and helpless sometimes.
Have you ever heard the term, have anybody ever heard the term Christians shoot their wounded? That, that's one that.
No, but it makes sense.
Yeah, well, I was called when we were going to a very small church when the second affair started with my husband, and it got around this very small church. It was a church plant, and the pastor was young, and he was our friend, and he and his wife, and he didn't know how to deal with it, so he didn't do anything. But I was called by one of the women in the church and said, I just heard your husband had an affair. I thought you two had a good marriage. Like you, Tammy, I felt slapped in the head, you know? Don't slap me because he's done something. Try to have mercy or compassion on me. And I didn't know how to answer her because I had no answers back then anyway.
Right.
So, but...
Well, you know, one of the things that I've tried to learn from it is, you know, not to take other people's opinions of me too seriously. You know, they don't get to define me. And
if, in fact,
I do find, you know, because, you know, there's, and again, it goes back to that scenario where you can have 10 people lined up and two throw darts at you and you focus in on the two. You know,
yes.
With my NASCA family, there's so many wonderful people here that I should not be focusing in on the two that decided to throw negative darts at me because I exposed myself, you know, exposed feelings, you know. So I can't focus in on that because there's mean people everywhere.
Right.
I've got to be able to learn to, you know, build more of a foundation in myself so I'm not just some vulnerable anthill that somebody can knock over and, you know, put me in a fetal position again. And it's tough. You know, it's tough. You know, one of my friends told me the other day that I'm overly sensitive, you know. And I look at it this way, you know, with me, when I support somebody, you know, I don't want to pick them apart. You know, I'm going to accept them as they are. People here at NASCA, I'm going to accept them as they are, flaws and all. My friends who I sit around, you know, at the pub and chit-chat with, you know, and I walk away, and then I have 10 people tell me, you know, people say, yeah, that one's over there running you down, you know. I should, you know, I don't run them down, you know. Why do they why do they feel the need to put me down? So then when I get my feelings hurt and I say something about it, you know, I have one of my friends, I'll give you an example. I have this friend that I hang out with. I've talked about her a couple of times on the show. Her first name is Cindy. I'll just say that. She's not affiliated with NASCA at all. Well, we go do things and we have fun, and she's one of these where she's always got to put somebody down. And I know clearly. Yeah, and I know clearly it's her self-esteem. I know it is. And then you know, I'll confront her with it. And I was sitting there, and her son comes up to me, and I know he was trying to hurt her because they're arguing. He says, Tammy, you're such a good person. I think you need to know just how badly, how much my mother talks bad about you. And she put you down. I was like, well, thank you, you know.
Oh.
Thanks a lot, you know. And I said, well, I'll just love her anyway. Well, I'm talking with friends yesterday, and I'm sitting there, same girl, and somebody comes up and we're sitting around chit-chat, and, you know, she's stopped drinking, and somebody said really loudly, well, it's a good thing Cindy stopped drinking because blah, 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 blah. And I just looked at her and I said, well, you know what? It's not for us to judge. I could have sat there and thrown darts at her, but I chose not to. I chose to have
good
her back
for you.
And said, you know what? And I'm not going to tell Cindy that. I'm not going to go back and say, you know, well, you're talking about me, but I've got your back. You know, that's not what it's about for me.
No,
so
I hate gossip, too.
Oh, yes, and that's all it is gossip. But I can't let somebody else's shortcomings and somebody else's opinions of me or somebody else trying to make themselves better by putting me down affect me.
Right.
And it's something I struggle with. So I don't know if anybody else feels it. And I know a lot of it comes from the type of abuse I had.
you know, mm-hmm. from a very young age, you're dumb, you're worthless, you're useless, this world would be better mm-hmm. off had you never been born, you're a nuisance, mm-hmm. You know, I love having your sister here, but I just wish I didn't have to deal with you. You know, those kind of things told to me as a kid, you know, with my mm-hmm. with my grandmother, with my stepfather, you know, my nickname was Dummy. It's really hard for me to, you know, to not be sensitive. But
right.
as an adult,
to
I'm
throw
thinking,
it off.
But is that, yeah, as an adult, I'm thinking, well, I shouldn't have those people in my life. You know, I want people in my life who, you know, will accept me as I am. And it's
right.
not always that easy.
That's right.
You know,
yeah.
You never know where which popcorn's going to pop.
That's right. I don't
think
we need a lot of friends. We just need one or two friends that support our goals. You know, they're there for us, like Cherie said, 100%. But we don't need people that don't understand us in our life. And a lot of times our family probably is the least to understand us.
Mm-hmm.
My mother and father are gone to heaven, to glory now. But, you know, they left the earth on 2011 and 12, and my mother was my best supporter. I could tell her anything. She wouldn't even tell my dad, who was, you know, a pastor, and she kept my secrets close to her heart. So I miss talking to her. I miss telling her. I miss calling her up, you know, and in the back and forth we had. We got so close. We moved them from New York State to Massachusetts, and we had them here for 4.5 years, and that's when I wrote and published my book and started speaking and traveling and going to conferences, and she could hardly wait to come back and hear all the miracles and all the stories that I had to share with her, and it was really neat. So I want to, anybody else have anything to add? If not, I'll ask another question.
Mark, didn't you say you heard of that book?
Mark?
Christians.
What?
The Shame Off, the Shame Off You book?
No,
that's
I haven't
the one
heard
about
of it.
Christians shoot their wounded. That's not a book. That's just a saying.
Oh, I've heard that saying, and Pam and I can probably attest to that as that kind of statement.
Right.
We've had to deal with a few church members where they left us out to dry, in my opinion. But when you first asked that question, the first thing that came to my mind for me, a hopeless situation, and was a brief period before I met Pam in Houston. See, I came from Pittsburgh, me and two other buddies. We were best friends. We grew up together. We all moved to Houston to get jobs back in the 70s because there was no work in Pittsburgh. And we were roommates. And we, you know, and we were, I'll admit, we were wild. We were beer drinking, hellraisers, and rock and roll and everything. And they both got married in Houston. So here I am. I'm left. So I'm all alone now. And Pam can attest to this. When she met me, I basically lived in a cave. It was an apartment, but I never opened the windows. In fact, I bought dark sheets to cover even to make it even darker, and I just lived in a hole. And the walls were starting to close in, and I felt even paranoia, walls closing in. And then, you know, that was definitely, I felt hopeless. I felt like, I don't know what to do. I didn't want to move back home because I guess I was too proud. I didn't want to go home with my tail between my legs and say I couldn't make it. But that was a very, very dark time for me. And then the day that I met Pam was the day that changed my whole life. And that's why. And I'll tell you, it's April 9th, and that's an important date to me. And Pam will tell you, we actually celebrate it like an anniversary of the day we met. Now, we got married on it later, but that day is important because that's the day that changed my life and basically drew me out of that darkness. But that was one time I really felt like I didn't know what I was going to do. I had a good job, and, you know, everything, but it was just complete loneliness, complete, just the walls closing in. I can't say nothing better. That's how it felt. But, you know, that day changed, and here we are, 39 years later.
Wow. Well, I'm glad to hear that you are much, much healthier, much better now.
Well, the Lord has helped us both with that, and that's what we depend on. So that's why we're all the way we are.
Yes, that's for sure. I couldn't do it without him.
Oh, no.
That's right.
So I want to read Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead. Oh, okay. Did we go? Did we give everybody? Did Cherie have a chance to answer your question? I don't want to leave her out before we go on. Cherie, do you have anything you wanted to add?
You know, I've forgotten what the question was.
I'm sorry.
Well, about being alone.
Bobby Joy, would you mind asking the question again?
About being alone and no light, and you've shared about being bullied and.
Oh, yes, definitely.
No glimmer of
hope. Yeah, I would like to add, you know, the only people that really listened to me were my grandmother, God rest her soul, and my aunt. But the thing is, I didn't live with them. So I didn't have the access to my support.
Right.
So because I felt like nobody was listening to me, that's when I started writing about everything that was happening to me. I started journaling. And I figured that, you know, if I can't talk about it, then I'll write about it. If I can't pour my heart out to a human being, then I'll pour my heart out on paper.
See, I did the same thing. But I couldn't look at all those journals that had all that pain in for 30-some years until I faced myself, and they were all on the desk. I had them all there, but I could not. But that's how my book got written. I had it all.
Right, and the same with my book. I didn't read my journals. I just wrote about it, and at the time, it was too painful to read.
Yeah, yeah.
So I put them up. I kept them put away for like 30 years. And,
yeah, me too.
Well, pardon me, 25 years. And finally, when I got ready to write my book, I took all the journals down, and I was able to write my book and everything that happened at school and at home in a chronological order. It was so my book is chronological. It's a chronological account of what happened.
Yeah. Wow. You and I have a lot in common that way then. Writing is a gift. And I knew since I was little I could write. Did you know that when you were little?
I did, because when I was 10 years old, I started writing my first stories, and they were comic book like I would buy a notebook and some pens, and I would write the story, and I would draw. I could also draw.
Where's
Cherie? Okay.
Thank you. Thank you. She may be having to. She just dropped.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, maybe she'll call back. I think she was having some technical issues.
Static or something.
Yeah. Okay, well, it is 8:54. It's just a little shy of 9 o'clock, so we've got 30 minutes left. Again, if anybody is listening, we know people stream in. If you'd like to join us, the number 646-595-2118. Please feel free to join us. Barbara Joy, you were about to go somewhere else. Cherie just called back. Good. Let me open the
mic. I lost you guys.
Can I ask Barbara Joy a question?
Okay.
Sure.
Yeah, okay. Go ahead.
People have recurrent dreams over and over and over and over again.
Well, it's funny you ask me that, because I've had dreams the last few weeks about my children being little. And some of them I can remember, most of the time I can't. But last night I had one about being raped. And I never have had, and I was. I said no, and he came on to me, and I wanted to remain a virgin. And that started the sexual addictions with my husband. But, yeah, I had one last night. But reoccurring dreams, it's in your psyche somehow. It's in your mind. Maybe for me, I kind of think watching those shows at night, some of those medic shows or firemen, you know, we watch a couple of those shows, and maybe that's why. I don't know. What do you think?
I've been having dreams about snakes.
Oh,
and
dear.
A lot of the dreams, I'm being able to tiptoe through them without any harm. But then a couple of them, I've been bitten, and I had to go to the ER, and I get there in time, and they give me a big shot in the arm and then some IV stuff, and I'm okay. And that's happened about three times. And then just recently, my son was bit, and he died. So, and I wake up, and my son's dead. I'm just like, I don't have a clue.
Well, I can tell you, so I've heard this several times, you know, several dreams that you have. You know, the dream where everybody has where you're walking around naked, you know, you're around people and you're naked and you feel embarrassed. That's they say typically in your psyche you felt exposed. The snakes in your psyche is picking up where you feel betrayed. You know, if you're dealing with someone maybe has betrayed you lately, it may be coming back with the snakes chasing you, or, you know, when you're being chased or if snakes are after you. A lot of times, my understanding from the psychology classes that I had is you may do you have anybody in your life that you've had felt betrayed by?
Well, it could
lately?
Go back to her childhood too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I do feel that about my sister. We're estranged. As a matter of fact, all three of us are estranged because of our personality disorder, because of our 14 years of child abuse. We were physically, emotionally, verbally, and I was sexually. So,
I'm estranged from my youngest son that designed the cover and the illustrations in my book too. I mean, once in a while he'll email his dad or ask for pictures of his childhood, but we don't have a really bonding relationship that we used to have. And I said, "What happened to you? You know." Oh, I just grew up, Mom. No, he didn't just grow up. He separated. So, but, yeah, just pray for them. And, you know, pray in the name of Jesus. Pray, you know, I don't know. When I go to sleep at night, I tell myself, just breathe. In and out, breathe. And I ask the Lord for good dreams or sweet, you know, dreams. But I think for me, sometimes it's the couple shows we may have watched, which we don't watch a lot of. I don't watch any crime, and I don't watch any news at night at all. But I had like Tammy just said about somebody chasing you. I had a dream about being chased on an airplane, but it was a airplane that had a tube that went straight down, and there were stairs going all the way to the top, and I was running all around and around all the way up to the top of the airplane on this long circular stairway, and I was being chased. So that could have been from my childhood too.
Okay. Well, I'm just putting up with them right now, but I'm asking Jesus to, you know, let me know what I need to do or why this is happening. But I think of Moses when he held up the when they were
the rod.
The Israelites were being bitten by the snakes, and Moses held up the bronze serpent.
Yep.
And if you looked at the bronze serpent, then you were saved.
Right. Well, let's change the subject a little bit. I'm going to read a little, just a little story, and then I'm going to ask a question. A glimmer on the sea. I lay on my bed full of stale liquor and despair, wrote journalist Malcolm Muggeridge, of a particularly dismal evening during his work as a World War II spy. Alone in the universe in eternity with no glimmer of light. In such a condition, he did the only thing he thought sensible. He tried to drown himself in the sea. Driving to the nearby coast, he began the long swim into the ocean until he grew exhausted. Looking back, he glimpsed the distant coastal lights. For no reason clear to him at the time, he started swimming back towards the lights. Despite his fatigue, he recalls an overwhelming joy. Muggeridge didn't know exactly how, but he knew God had reached him in that dark moment, infusing him with a hope that could only be supernatural. This world tries to drag us into the depths, but there's no reason to succumb to despair. As Muggeridge said about his swim in the sea, it became clear to me that there was no darkness, only the possibility of losing sight of a light which shone eternally because I wasn't looking at it. In what places have you glimpsed the light that shines eternally? Anybody want to answer that? In what places have you glimpsed the light that shines eternally? I mean, there must be certain times in your life that you have felt, wow, this is really awesome, you know, and this is the light that I needed to know and hear and see and feel.
I know one.
Joy. I think. Oh, go ahead.
Pamela?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, go
when
ahead.
When I watched the movie The Shack, it blew me away.
Oh, I know. I love that. Yeah. Did you read the book?
I read the book and saw the movie, and, you know, I didn't think the movie would do the book justice, but it was spot on.
Mm-hmm.
And it changed my life, and it still changes my life every time I think about it.
Yeah, I love that book. I don't think I saw them. Yeah, we did see the movie, but I love the book.
Yeah, yeah. But it had such a supernatural,
mm-hmm.
Profound, you know,
yeah.
Phenomenal, deep message and story and
right.
Plot. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was one of my... you know, like seeing,
mm-hmm.
seeing into the ethereal or the,
Cherie, you started to say something about what you experienced.
There's been a few times I've felt that way, and one of those times was when I finally discovered my value. You know,
mm-hmm.
and I did that after doing a lot of reading.
Mm-hmm.
And the turning point for me was in 2007, I got rid of an abusive partner.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, I started reading. I started reading a lot of self-help, started
mm-hmm.
reading about books on positive thinking. And I think that was a turning point for me because, you know, when I did that, I started discovering my self-worth.
Right.
And I think that's the greatest gift that
mm-hmm.
God ever gave me.
Mm. That's awesome.
I didn't know my own strength. You know, I ended an abusive relationship with a partner. And I hadn't been strong enough before now, but before then, pardon me.
Mm-hmm.
But I got so tired. I got so tired of being trampled on, and I just told him, get out, never come back.
Mm-hmm.
And so before then, I had not known my own strength. And it was then that I started discovering my self-worth and realizing that, hey, huh. I, you know,
I'm worthy of more than what I've been getting. I deserve better.
Mm.
And sure enough.
Mm-hmm. Good.
That's when things got better from there on out.
Mine was finding a passion and a purpose for my life. And I realized, I mean, people say, oh, I'm so sorry that happened to you, you know, and I'm like, no, don't feel sorry for me. Because like Joseph in the Bible, whose brothers, you know, they were reunited and his father was ecstatic that he was alive and they thought he was dead. And, you know, God's brought in so much life and so much light into my life as an offering, a drink offering, with such passion and hope. I'm ecstatic about it. I had a interview with a Asian woman, Miss Texas, that I met on LinkedIn, my LinkedIn account. I've been really blessed that way during all this past year with getting a lot of people in my life to read my blogs and links and see my CBN Asia 4-minute YouTube movie documentary of my life. And so she did an interview with me, and she was on the phone with me another whole hour after she taped the show. And she came back, she called me today, she emailed me 3 times. She can't wait to interview me again. She is, you know, Asian and I'm Caucasian, and she works with sex trafficking and domestic violence, and she wants to go to the Philippines or Asia with me. She's from China. And I told her, well, when I was in the Philippines, and this was light for me to be able to preach in 23 churches and in prisons there 3 different times and speak to so many people in the playground and parks, because in Asia they don't talk about anything like this at all with anybody. And with this woman that interviewed me, Miss Texas, when she heard that, I said, do you know President Duterte in the Philippines? It's like President, you know, Biden, only this is in the Philippines, has my book. And she said, how did you get your book into his hands? I said, well, I know he's an abuse survivor. I read about him. He's Catholic. He hates the Catholic Church because of the priest molestation and all that. And his wife's a strong Christian. And I said, I had an interview with somebody that works with President Duterte, and she's head of human trafficking and domestic violence in the Philippines. And I had an interview at her father's church. She's a Christian, and she interviewed my book promoter and me while we were in the Philippines for 2 months. And, I mean, God has opened up so many doors and so many miracles for me. I'm still amazed at the 2 months that I spent there and the doors that opened every single day. I was out and about and sharing with little kids and no go, yell, tell. We'd tell the kids in the classroom at Barnard Christian Academy and talk to the teenagers. Now this Miss Texas called me today, and she wanted me to come on the show again on this Sunday and do my teen and dating violence PowerPoint presentation. And I'm like, oh, I got to pull the reins here, because she's pushing me a little bit too quick. I'm not quite ready yet. And I have to go through it and make sure it's not too long and, you know, look at my notes again and review it and everything. It's a really raw type, you know, tells my story with bullet points and why teens get involved in violent relationships, and maybe the dad's in prison or there's nobody home and the little kid has to, you know, be home by themselves, and why they get involved, and or they come out of the womb with violence and shouting and swearing and things that should not be happening in the home. So, but I'm just blown away with the doors that God is continuing to open for me, including this show. I'm delighted to be here tonight.
Well, we're delighted to have you here tonight. I think we've had some interesting conversations. We do have about 20 minutes left, so I will ask, all the mics are open. We have Mark in Louisiana, Pamela in Louisiana. We have Cherie in Tennessee, and I'm Tammy from Florida, and Barbara Joy is in Massachusetts. If anybody would like to call in, we do have 20 minutes left, 646-595-2118. But does anyone have any comments that they would like to make on what we have talked about so far? Maybe something that you thought of, something's on your heart. All the mics are open, and I'll throw that out. And if not, we can go on to another subject. Anybody?
I can't think of anything.
Okay. Well, that's okay. How about you, Mark? You've been a little quiet lately.
Well, I can't think of anything. I do have, I have a glimmer of hope that we were talking about, and the hope I have is with all, and it comes from and from the Book of Revelation, but with all the chaos going around us and everything in this world, the fact that you can read and see that God is on the throne, to me, That is a great strength for me to know that. Because not that I don't worry about things sometimes, but to know that that is set in concrete, that he's the center of the universe, that just gives me the greatest hope that no matter what's going on around us, he's there, he's in control. And I agree with Pam, the movie The Shack, it gives you a feeling of, like you're just meeting God, face to face, and it gives you that kind of warm, fuzzy feeling inside to know that he cares about you and he loves you. And that's my hope, for me to get going. I just retired, so we're stepping into a new chapter in our life, but I don't seem to have any kind of worry, but because I know that he's helping and he's there. And that's my glimmer of hope. I mean, probably a big shining hope.
Amen. Has anybody been with somebody when they're dying that is a Christian that you know they're going to be going to heaven?
I was with my dad.
So was I.
He had been saved. So I know without a shadow of a doubt where he is.
Well, I was too, but my husband stayed a little bit longer in the hospice. I visited him in the afternoon, and he was, we knew he was sick. He had COVID. I don't mean COVID. He had C. diff, and he had MRSA, and he was very sick, and he didn't know how sick he was. And this happened. He died, was the last, just before New Year's Eve, the last night before New Year's Eve, 2012. My mother had died the year before. And I had just visited him, and, he was talking and eating and, a little bit here and there. We were enjoying one another's company. I came home and went grocery shopping, and the doctor called me, and she said, "Barbara, I don't know what happened, but your dad's turned for the worse, and you need to get to here immediately." I mean, I could just sense it in her voice, and I just knew. So I called our three sons. Two of them came, the youngest that did my book and the oldest, both came. And the middle son couldn't because he has that deep, deep compassion, and he would be bawling and, feeling it if he knew his grandfather was dying, which he was. Well, I got there, and my husband came, and the two sons were there, and we got to hold his hand and briefly talk to him before they put him on morphine. Was your dad put on morphine, Cherie?
Yes.
Yeah. And that was the hardest part for me, knowing that he wasn't going to be eating and drinking or anything like that, and waiting for probably 3 days until when I got, when I got the call, but my husband was there after, you know, I was there late, and I had been there all day, and I was tired, and the boys brought me home. And my husband wanted to stay, so he stayed. And what he told me is, he said, your dad kept looking up while the TV was on the wall, and he kept putting his arm up. And my husband said he thought maybe he wanted the remote, so he put it in his hand, and he dropped it, and he kept looking up, and he lifted his head up a little bit. He was now on morphine. And my husband said he glimpsed heaven. He is absolutely sure that, you know, when Mark was talking about the book of Revelation, that came to me, that memory came to me. And that gave me such peace and comfort, knowing that he was going to be entering eternity with his wife and his parents, and he had 9 siblings, and he was one of 9, and, you know, they were all there. And as hard as it was for me to lose him, and at that time it was during my mother's death that I was at a prison conference. I was there with my dad and came home. But it gave me such comfort to know that he was entering eternity, and we knew, you know, for sure. I mean, he had such a evangelistic heart and led so many to faith in Jesus that, you know, he and I even led a couple doctors to the Lord in the nursing home. And to have a little mission with my dad was so neat. I led a heroin addict to the Lord that was in my support group. She had gone to AA and maybe 3 times a day, and got so messed up with the book of Revelation with one of the Buddhists that was trying to convince her about different things and wrongfully. And she got so messed up and confused. So I said, how would you like to go visit my dad this afternoon? This was before he got really sick and moved to hospice. And so I called him and I said, Dad, I'm going to bring Holly to come see you. She had been in my support group for about 8 months. And I loved Holly, and I loved having her come in my group. And she had been in with drug dealers and put in prison for a while, and, you know, went through a hardcore life in orphanages and things. So we went and visited him, and my father had his Bible open at John 3:16 and read that with her. And she asked the Lord into her heart, and she jumped into my car, and she said, did I become born again just now? And that was so neat, because to have that kind of a mission, a very short, brief, few months mission with my dad, was so exciting and so uplifting, just to have that happen. And then shortly after that, she had a hole in her leg, and she bled out and died, and to know her for 8 short months. And, boy, what a gift to know that she's in heaven because of my dad.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I got some news that's got me upset yesterday. My sister, my only sister, the one who I grew up with,
mm-hmm.
and she's got a story as well. She called me yesterday morning, told me that she had a bad pap smear, and she's facing, you know, stage 3 cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And it just put me in a shock, and I don't want to lose my sister.
A
couple of years ago, I could have killed her. I could have strangled her. But, you know, we've reckoned. I didn't talk to her for 5 years. You know, she's really gotten her life together. And now, you know, I don't know what's facing, because, you know, this is the first time I've had to deal with, you know, someone that close to me, you know, with cancer. And it's at stage 3.
Is this ovarian cancer?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
Tammy?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, my book promoter
so,
is at end stage with breast cancer. And I talked to her yesterday. It's strange that you say that, because that brought back her
mm-hmm.
phone call, and she was loopy. She was talking like she was on drugs,
mm-hmm.
and she's been in the hospital for months. She's got COVID and COPD and cancer, and
mm-hmm.
she was an addict, and, you know, drinking and smoking and
mm-hmm.
all that caught up with her.
Mm-hmm.
She traveled the world with me, all over.
Wow.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
And it's
I'm
scary.
Glad that
it's
you
scary.
Reconciled with her.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I don't know that much about cancer. I know stage four is the worst and stage one is the best. You know, I don't know what we're going to be facing as a family. So it's got me
shook up.
Where
does she live?
She lives in Augusta, Georgia.
Oh.
So, you know, and I've got to, you know, she was abused herself. You know,
mm-hmm.
I don't want to tell her story, but she's got her own story. I mean, she went
mm-hmm.
through the drugs and, you know, it's just the stealing,
right.
the lying, the cheating, was, you know,
mm-hmm.
locked up, you
yeah.
know, got out, went back to the same lifestyle and then
right.
hit rock bottom, went through the sobriety, you know, the 12 steps.
Right.
And now she's her group that she's with now, she doesn't drink, she doesn't smoke, she doesn't, you know,
mm-hmm.
Then they ride the motorcycle, like you said. You know, she's in that their little sobriety group
mm-hmm.
has a motorcycle, and you know, it turns
mm-hmm.
out to be a good person. And
great.
Now she's facing this. Yeah, and it's scary.
Yeah, that's hard. Okay. Hard for you.
Mm-hmm. It is.
I'm so sorry. You're in my thoughts and
mm-hmm.
prayers.
Yeah, we'll be praying.
I appreciate that. Thank
praying
you.
For her.
Thank you. I mean, yesterday was tough, but you know, today I was just so worried. I mean, she's in my thoughts all day yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
You know, someone who has been through the kind of things that she's gone through and triumphed and now this.
Right.
So, you know, none of us
yeah.
are promised tomorrow. So.
No, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, just stay close to her as close as you can and drop her a note or a card or a verse of scripture or something
mm-hmm.
that would uplift her spirits, because I'm sure she's worried. Does she have a husband
yeah.
or children?
She has two children and a lot of grandkids. And then, you
uh-huh.
know, she called me a couple of days ago and said, she's crying, I need my sister. And, you know, she had told me about, you know, a falling out that she had with her friends. And I think she didn't tell me. She may have known. I suspect she knew then because she was so upset.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and then we talked about something. And then when she called me yesterday, she was uplifting and, you know,
mm-hmm.
here it is, and blah, 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 and you know, she wasn't falling apart. I suspect she had fallen apart and gotten the news when she
mm-hmm.
called me, you know, Monday, because
mm-hmm.
then it was Wednesday, you know, 2 days later she calls me, you know, kind of an upbeat and kind of a here it is.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like she may have kind of dealt with it, and I don't
either
know.
Either that or maybe
it's
she's
just,
in going through grief,
mm-hmm.
or there's different stages of grief, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, right.
You know, denial, anger, whatever. Maybe she's,
mm-hmm.
you know, going
yeah.
through a lot. Well, we'll
right.
be praying for her.
Well, thank you. Thank you. But
and you.
No, thank you.
And her
you.
Family.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any way that you
well,
could see her?
Well, I'm going to plan a trip to go home. You know, my mom lives in Augusta, and you know, my sister's there, and you know, my
mm-hmm.
you know, that's where I grew up, so I got a lot of friends there. I think
mm-hmm.
it's going to push me to go home sooner and more often.
Yeah.
So,
mm-hmm.
yeah. Well, thank you for your thoughts and prayers. We do have about 6 minutes left. We do need to wrap it up. If you, Barbara Joy, if you have some final thoughts that you'd like to give us, now we'll go ahead and do that, and then we'll go to the roundabout to thank you for being here with us. So let's start with you, Barbara Joy. You got some final thoughts on what we've discussed?
Well,
in general?
I would just say keep close to God, everybody, because He's the one that's going to uplift you from day to day. We never know what we're going to face. I had a man, I don't even remember where I read this or heard it, or maybe he told me the story. I think he told me he was involved with pornography for 30 some years, and he told his wife, and he said, "What a big burden to let that off my shoulders." But what he didn't realize is when he put it on her shoulders, his wife went through the grief stages and shock and really extreme anger. And he said, "What I didn't realize is, yeah, I held it in for 30 years. She didn't know a thing, and I was relieved to tell her, but I didn't realize the big weight that she would carry. So that just came to me when I was thinking about some of the things we discussed.
Right.
So, yeah, it takes a lot of time to go through things like that.
Exactly. Well, we've had some.
You never know.
We've had. Yeah, absolutely. Well, we've had folks, you know, share from their heart, and I really appreciate that. My heart goes out to Cherie for finding her husband the way she did. That had to be traumatic. Thank you for sharing that experience, and I'm so sorry you had to go through that, Cherie.
Thank you so much.
Aww.
Yes, thank you for calling in tonight, too. I called her this afternoon, and I reminded her. I said, are you coming on tonight? Oh, it's tonight. I said, well, I don't want to put any, you know, make you feel like you have to come on, but I want you to know that the show is on tonight if you'd like to join us. So thank you for calling in.
You're so
welcome.
I'm glad I did.
I am too.
Yeah. Well, me too. Well, thank you, Cherie, for calling in and sharing your heartfelt story. And then we have Pamela, who shared her story, you know, her own self-survival and, you know, facing suicide. Pamela, thank you for sharing that. And I'm glad you made it, because we love you and we love having you here with us. And I know Mark does. And, you know, Mark helping you out and praying and, you know, waking up,
yeah,
like you said, the next day. So thank you for sharing that, Pamela.
Thank you. You're welcome.
And we'll pray for you with the dreams, too, Pamela.
Please.
Yes, we will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like you said, yeah, I think you had mentioned, I don't know if your sister, you said something about that y'all are, you know, that you feel betrayed. And, you know, is that something that may have come up, surfaced here lately, you know, with family verbiage or anything like that?
No, I don't. We ain't talking over a year. And she lives miles from me.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's what, like I said, you know, when you have that naked dream, that's when you feel exposed, and then the snakes and people chasing you could be several things, but the snakes, they usually say that's a, you know, thoughts of betrayal. So, and I think Barbara Joy may be right. It could just be, you know, thinking about your past coming up, you know, servicing your dream. But we'll keep you in our thoughts and prayers on that one as well.
Thank you.
Sure. Mark, do you have any final thoughts?
No, I was just glad that I was here tonight, and I just appreciate, you know, all the guests on, Miss Barbara Joy and Cherie, and my wife Pamela and you. And I'm just trying to get Tam, you know, I'm trying to learn how to do this, and I'm getting more and more relaxed about it, so that's helping me. So really, this is what helps me, is when we get on and talk.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Well, you just let me know, no rush at all. You let me know when you want to host. If not, just, you know, just be here as a trailer, and when you get comfortable, just let me know. So we'll pull the trigger.
Okay.
Well, again, I'd like to thank Barbara Joy for being here with us. She has talked about her book, I think Some Ways to Get It, Listen to the Cry of the Child. So if anyone's listening wants to reach out to Barbara Joy about that book, please do so. Tomorrow night we have a special guest, Laverne Gordon from Avon, Massachusetts, and she's a survivor of child abuse. I believe Carol will be hosting that show. If you have time, please join her and support Laverne. That's it. Yeah, Laverne. Yes, correct. So I'm going to go ahead and end the show. Thank you all for being here, and I'm going to end it by saying God bless the children of the world, and God bless adult survivors of child abuse. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Tomorrow, 'cause that dawn was-